Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Teresa Robinson about female veterans. Then Garrett Veal will discuss the American Legion Boys State. And Quentin Roberts will review last weekend's Service Academy football games. Of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. It's a pleasure to introduce Teresa Robinson. She's an American Legion member, is both female and a veteran, a Navy vet. And it's true that female vets don't get as much attention as compared to males. And we're going to talk about that. Welcome, Teresa. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Denny, for having me. I appreciate it.
So start by telling us about your time in uniform, Teresa. I know you were in the Navy. When and why did you join? What did you do? Where did you serve?
I joined the Navy in 1974. I had graduated from high school in 1973. I started college, didn't like it, went down to the recruiting station, started talking to them, ended up joining the Navy, went home and told my parents. They were not super happy. It was tail end of Vietnam. My brother had just gotten out of the Navy and he was home and everybody was happy he was home, and they were all thinking, why in the world did she join? And I have no profound reason for joining, except I was just led to. I know now, as being older, it was probably the hand of God that led me that way. And I was faithful enough to take that hand and go. It was an experience like I'd never had before, and I could not have imagined. I thought it was going to be an adventure. And
I'll bet it was.
It was an adventure, but not the kind of adventure I thought it was going to be. I did my boot camp in Orlando, Florida at the Recruit Training Center, and that does not exist now. And when I got finished that, I went to the Naval Training Center across the base in Orlando and went to A school, became a personnelman, and then my duty station was at NAS Miramar, right outside of San Diego, which is now a Marine Corps base. But it was then a Naval Air Station, and I was stationed at VF-124. We were the F-14 Tomcats. We trained all the F-14 pilots.
Wow. So Florida and San Diego, you're used to sunny weather then, huh?
Well, I came from Michigan, so so I was used to winter, and I missed it when I was in those places.
Well, you're back in Michigan now, so obviously you took care of that.
I did.
Okay. One of the things that we want to talk about is the interaction between males and females in our military. It's something that I don't have a lot of experience with because I was in an infantry unit much of the time, and I just never did interact with females except on rare occasions. You have quite the other end of the story. You had lots of interaction both ways. So let's talk about that. Did it work?
I don't know any other kind of military besides male and female working together. Because from day one, when I went into boot camp, the Recruit Training Center in Orlando, it was a base, had boot camp for both men and women. We ate our meals together, but that's all we did together. Then when you got to A school, once I got out of boot camp, my whole service time was serving with men and women. And some of it was very, very positive, and I met some great women and some great men. And some of it was not as positive, some of my experiences, but I was really young. And to be totally honest with you, when those experiences would happen that were off color, it was like, this was just the way life was. This is how men treated women. This is what you're supposed to do. You walk down the street, somebody thinks you look good, they whistle, they do a holler, a cat call, oftentimes inappropriate. They talk down to you. It was my first time out in the world. You know, I'd been in school, in high school, and then I joined the military. So I thought, well, this is the way life is. Well, guess what? Life is not supposed to be that way.
That's right. And
life is not supposed to be that way.
And one of the things you had and I both had in common, we were raised by families and in communities where that didn't happen or didn't happen very often, right?
Correct. So it was very, very foreign to me to think that another human would treat another human like this. And there were all kinds of different people that I met when I was in the military from all walks of life. Some had better manners than others, and some treated each other better than others. And that's where I think the military needs to do some work, and they need to do some education, because not everybody comes from a background like I did or like you did. And
I agree. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Navy vet Teresa Robinson. Teresa, that had to, in some way, even if it was not obvious, affect the combatability of units when people don't treat each other with that kind of respect. And some people feel awkward being around other people who are just their peers. That doesn't sound like a functioning situation. Obviously, you function to a degree, but not to the extent that you need. And we're talking about combat. We're talking about life and death and maybe the survival of our nation. We need something better than that, don't we?
We do. We do. But I do want to take a moment and say to you, Denny, that because of that, because of those experiences, what oftentimes happens to women, because of how they're treated, when they get to that job, whatever their duty station is, they know they have to be super duper prepared. They have to know that job inside and out and be better than the next person, because they know someone's going to give them a hard time. They know that their skill set is going to be tested. So they try to be the very best of the best. Sometimes they achieve that, sometimes they don't. I was not in combat. You were in combat, so you look at it much differently than I do. From my perspective, I worked in an office, and from my perspective, we worked well together. It was just having to work under the smoke screen of these oftentimes inappropriate, insulting comments that were made, and you had to let that stuff roll off your back for the greater good of what you had to do, for what the whole group had to do, for the job that the squadron had to function.
Yes.
We were there for the functioning of the squadron. We were there to train the pilots. We were there to train the enlisted personnel that worked on the aircraft to keep our aircraft in the air. And that's what we always had to keep in the forefront.
Well, and the mission focus is one of the things that we did all learn in the military. Mm-hmm. Teresa, it's really clear that we need to continue this conversation. I would like us to, going forward, have a series of conversations about the interaction of men and women in the military, just so that we can all understand each other, because just all minds is combat infantrymen. That's 1% or maybe 10% of the military. How about the other 90%? Do I understand what's going on? Do I understand what's going on there and how to do it? And you have your piece of the pie. Let's get some other women together and continue to have conversations on male-female interaction in our military. Will that work for you?
I love to hear that. I love to hear this attitude of wanting to learn, wanting to know each other, wanting to gather experiences so that we can better the military services walking forward. Denny, I am in.
That's awesome. We will continue. We'll have to get together and figure out exactly when and how, but we will. Thank you, Teresa. Thanks for sharing with us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. Thank you for being a good friend.
You're very welcome, Denny. And please, everybody out there, remember, she is a veteran.
Amen. And deserves all the respect any male does, for sure. Okay, next we'll talk with Garrett Veal about the American Legion Boy State. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some knee bends, troops. Go halfway down, do about 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
The Iraq War is more than 20 years old, and troops are still on the ground in Iraq. But why?
For too long, lawmakers have sent American troops to Iraq and beyond in support of vague missions that don't tie to a vital national interest.
at Concerned Veterans for America, we're translating our unique experiences as veterans to call for a better foreign policy that makes Americans safer and more prosperous.
Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. I'm happy to welcome to the show Garrett Vial. Garrett served our nation, and he's active now in the American Legion, and specifically, he works with the Boy State program. This is cool. Welcome, Garrett. Glad you could join us.
Glad to be here.
Garrett, start by telling us about your time in uniform. When and why did you join, and what did you do?
Well, I first enlisted in the Navy in July of 1970, following my dad's footsteps of being in the service and served in the Navy during World War II. My two older brothers went Army, so I decided the Navy would be better for me. I always did the opposite of them. And I did 20 years in the Navy, served on three surface ships, three submarines, and one air squadron, and retired out of the Senior Enlisted Academy in 1991.
Wow. Well, I spent about 4 hours on a submarine once, and I found every place on that boat to hit my forehead. So I'm definitely not a submariner.
Well, I'm real short, so I didn't have that problem.
What got you active in the American Legion, and then what got you active in Boys State?
After I retired, unfortunately, I lost one of my sons in an automobile accident. We had a funeral at the American Legion post in town, and the commander of the post at that time was my old school bus driver when I went to high school, and he got with the people, and they made me a member that day, and they stuck the grappling hook in me, and they had me hooked, and I've been helping ever since.
Hey, that makes sense.
And then I got into Boys State. I was really into the program. I recruited boys for Boys State when I was junior vice at the post. And then the director of Boys State at the time kept trying to get me to go to Boys State. So I went 1 year. I fell in love with the program. I liked the transition that I see these young men go through from within hours of being there. They just morphed into these people that got into the process. I've seen a couple hundred boys show up on a Sunday, and the following Saturday, I had a couple hundred young men leaving with a whole different attitude about life and how to do things politically, and learned how to do teamwork and everything a lot better. I've seen a lot of kids make a lot of changes in their attitude within that week that we're there. They also make friends for a life through this program.
Yes, sir. How can you not be attracted to that? Okay, give us Boys State 101. Exactly what is it? Who's it for? What does it do?
Okay, it's for juniors. And I might say there's also a Girl State program that's run by the American Legion Auxiliary that's similar to Boys State. So what I tell you about Boys State is pretty much the same thing that goes on for Girl State, but that's through the Auxiliary.
Thank you.
These programs are a week-long program where they participate in mock local counties and state government exercise. Delegates learn firsthand about leadership, practical citizenship, and the democratic process. They learn how to come to terms, even though they may have different opinions on something. By the time it's all over, they come to a decision and work things out.
That's incredible. And it's so important. I mean, the strength of our nation is diversity, and that has diversity in thought. You see it one way, I see it another, but together we can work together and we find something that we can both work with as we like and trust each other. That's what America is supposed to be about.
And every state in the nation, with the exception of Hawaii's been talking about setting up the program. But right now, every other state has a Boy State program. They differ in price and they differ in a little bit in the process, but they're all basically the same process where they go in and they set up a mock state government for the state where they're at. Some of them are done on college campuses like ours. Some are done on military bases. But the program is basically still the same thing. It's ran by the American Legion. We go out, we hire an educational staff. We have volunteers from the Sons of the American Legion and Legionnaires that are there with the kids for the whole week, supervising, monitoring, and talking to them about the Legion and what we do in life and how we function after the military. And they ask questions about it. We talk to them, recommendations on colleges and stuff. A lot of them want to go to an academy, so we tell them to apply to every academy. You might not get the one you want at first, but if you apply to all of them, you might get one.
That's awesome. So this really is taking young men, and for the Girl State, young women, who are getting at that point to where if they understood how the American government system is supposed to run, they could start paying attention, getting active in it, and participating. That's the goal, I guess, right?
Yeah, the goal is to teach them how the democratic process is supposed to work and get them involved so they realize how important it is to be involved in your community with the process of running the community and working together with it and learning how to come to terms with your differences and come into a mutual understanding what's best for the majority, not just for your own outlook. One of the biggest problems I see is sometimes people are worried more about their own wants and needs instead of for the majority.
Yes,
that's what
sir.
We need to do. We have to look at what's best for the nation, the state, the community, the city, not just our own personal little thing.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam, Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Garrett Veal about American Legion Boy State. Garrett, this sounds just awesome. And the fact that it's offered in virtually every state and it's there for boys and girls. And these are basically high school junior age people. Did I hear you say that right?
Yeah, it's like the ones that are juniors this year, after they finish this school year, they get to go to Boy State. And Boy State, like here in Michigan, Boy State this year will be June 23rd through the 29th at Grand Valley State University in Allendale, Michigan. Then they'll go there and they'll finish it. And what we really like is to take those boys that have done it. Then next year, they can talk to the new junior class, let them know about the program. They're our best salesmen for the program to talk to them, the experience they had here, and keep the program growing.
That is awesome, because one of the most important things we have to do is have our citizens know that they have to know their elected officials. They need to communicate with them, and they need to understand that the goal is to find the common ground that's good for everybody. And for that information to be taught is incredibly good, because I taught American government at a local college for 15 years, and most of my students didn't know anything like that. So this is beyond great. I can see why you are addicted to it. Are there any particular stories you can tell about young men that did a turnaround?
I can give you one on one. We had one gentleman that was at Boy State, and the second day of Boy State, he came up to me and said, "Mr. Vial, I think I want to quit. I want to go home." And I told him, I said, "Brock, you got to look at it. Why?" He goes, "Well, these kids are all A students, and I'm just a CB student. I'm not really good." I said, "Brock, you're better than what you think you are. What you need to do is stick this out. Prove that you're a man, stay with the program, and you'll find out that you know a whole lot more than you realize, and you'll fit in. These other kids might have better grades than you, but they're no better than you. Don't ever think someone's better than you." He calls his mother. She tells him the same thing, and she used some words I won't say on the radio, that he needed to man up. She wouldn't let him come home. At the end of the week, he was our first runner-up to go to Boys Nation. And later on in the year, when I was back at the school recruiting boys, he seen me and came over and told me, "I'm on the honor roll this year. First time in my life I've ever made the honor roll." This program also builds their self-esteem. If your self-esteem is high, you tend to do better. When you have a low self-esteem, you doubt yourself, and that helps direct you towards failure. So helping build their self-esteem helps build these into better students.
Great story. We're about out of time. I assume that any interested listeners who want it anywhere in the nation could just ask at their local American Legion post about Boy State if they didn't know.
They can go to their local Boy State, or they can just go to their computer and say, whatever state, say, State of Oklahoma, Department of Oklahoma, Boy State. Now, boom, it'll come up, and there'll be a program talking to them about Boy State for that state. I might also add that enrollment fees or tuitions are paid by American Legion Post and other community-minded organizations. Like I said, the price differs from everywhere, but parents are allowed to pay for the kids to go if they want to, but if they don't, then the American Legion goes out and pays it or finds someone that will cover the cost for this program.
Awesome. Thank you, Garrett. Thanks for sharing this important information today. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform. And now, thank you, brother.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for what you do.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Quentin Roberts will review last weekend's Service Academy football games, and we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, then take a break and stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gilliam. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And it is Service Academy football time. I'm joined, of course, by our football co-host, Air Force vet Quentin Roberts. Brother, welcome aboard. Glad to have you join us again.
Well, Denny, it has been a tremendous football season for our Service Academy football teams and overall for college football as we have watched and downs. It's been a roller coaster season for every team, especially our Service Academy football teams.
Yes, it has been. Wasn't that good this past weekend for Service Academies when the best team was Army and they didn't play, so therefore they didn't lose.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's not saying a lot. Navy played SMU and they lost big, but SMU's a powerhouse, aren't they?
Well, Danny, they are ranked number 25 in the country. And boy, did they really look like it as they took down the midshipmen of Navy 59-14. SMU moved to 10-2 on the season, 8-0 in the conference, and will play for the American Athletic Conference Championship. Navy, in the meantime, fell to 5-6, 4-4 in the conference. As I mentioned earlier, they suffered really one of those roller coaster seasons. It was in Ford Field in Dallas in front of 21,490 fans that the Mustangs found themselves rolling in the first half, jumping out to a 52-14 lead. The Mustangs scored 28 points in the first quarter and 24 in the second, while outgaining Navy 452-112. In the first half alone, SMU quarterback Preston Stone completed 14 of his 19 passes for 322 yards and 3 touchdowns before leaving midway through the second quarter with an injury. Navy scored on a 1-yard touchdown run by Davo Fofana after Eli Heidenreich recovered a muffed SMU punt at the 1-yard line in the first quarter. And a 69-yard electrifying run by freshman quarterback Braxton Woods in the second quarter. In the second half, really all the scoring was pretty much completed except a 74-yard pick six by SMU safety Isaiah Nakobia. It was a tough game for the midshipmen, but you know what, Danny, they are 5-6. They scraped out a 4-4 conference record, and they're going to look good, and they're going to be ready to go when it comes to playing Army.
Yes, they are. And considering what a new year this was for them, new coach and everything. It's not bad.
No, certainly not. And I think that's important to point out, Danny, that they are under first-year coach Brian Newberry. And Coach Newberry, this was his first time as a head coach. So there's a learning curve there. One of the main learning curves is you got to find your quarterback. Navy went through about four quarterbacks this year. Xavier Arline was the one who probably will be starting against Army. Braxton Woodson is the future, however. He's the freshman, even against SMU, completed 9 passes for 71 yards, in addition to that long touchdown run. So he's the future, but we'll see how it goes against Army.
Yep. Stay tuned for that. And Air Force wasn't beaten quite so bad, but still losing by 8 points isn't fun.
You know, Danny, the Falcons started off the season 8-0. They were sporting a lofty number 19 ranking in the country. And I tell you what, it all came crashing down. Starting with the game against Army, Air Force just limped to the finish line with a 4-game losing skid. But again, just as in the case of Navy, it was a matter of the quarterbacks and a lack of quarterback continuity. When starting quarterback Zach Larrier went down, they moved to Jensen Jones. They moved to John Boucher. Just, I tell you, it's been one after another. And when you start going down that far, you're going to run into some bumps on the road. And this past week, it was against Boise State. 27-19 in a Mountain West contest in Boise, Idaho. The Falcons, again, limped to a 5-3 record in Mountain West play and struggled to get the offense going early as Boise jumped out to an early 10-0 lead. The Falcons got on the board at the 5:22 mark in the second quarter as Matthew DePore hit a field goal from 50 yards out. But Boise scored on their next play on offense when Ashton Genty took a screen pass and scampered 75 yards for a touchdown. DePore scored another field goal for the Falcons from 45 yards out as time expired to make it a 17-6 game at the half. Air Force opened the third quarter with a touchdown drive, 75 yards in 5 plays as backup quarterback John Boucher punched it in from a yard out to make it 17-12 after the failed 2-point conversion. The Falcons were in the game. The tensions were rising, but Boise struck with another big play by Genty, who scampered 50 yards for a touchdown run to make it 24-12 in the third quarter. Genty accounted for 225 total yards of offense for the Broncos, rushing for 107 and receiving for another 118. The Falcon defense did come up with an interception, its second of the game, to pull within a score in the second half. But Broncos just did not fold as they scored on a field goal with 4:31 to play in the fourth from 52 yards out to make it 27-19 and effectively closing the door on the Falcons. The Falcons did have 337 yards of total offense, 206 on the ground, and 131 through the air by John Boucher. Ben Britton made his first career start at quarterback for the Falcons, but only through one pass attempt and carried 6 times for 24 yards before being subbed out for Boucher. Jonathan Youngblood led Air Force with 11 tackles in the game.
Well, and Army goofed off. They were goofing off today. So that's it. This coming weekend, there are no Service Academy football games. The next game is on the 9th of December, the Army-Navy game. My wife and I will be in the stands.
Nelly.
That's a family event. And I'm counting on Army beating the snot out of Navy. I root for them every game but one. And I think my nephews at the Naval Academy is going to be cheering against me. It's going to be an interesting game.
That's right. As they call it, a family divided sometimes. But you know what? Everybody at the end of the game and before the game actually is on the same team. And that's for this great country of ours. But you know, Denny, that Army-Navy game is going to be a good one. Both teams are 5-6 going into the game. They've had their share of ups and downs. Army is looking a little stronger right now. They found their quarterback. They have found their identity. Navy has played strong defense all season, but exactly who's going to line up at quarterback? Is it going to be Arline? Is it going to be Braxton Woodson? We still don't know. And so That's why I will give the edge to Army at this point. And the game will be in Foxborough, Massachusetts, the home of the New England Patriots.
Yes, sir. And the Gillums will be there. And you're right. When we tailgate for a couple hours before the game, Army, Navy, we're all the same. We all laugh at each other. We kid with each other. But we enjoy each other's company. A couple of years ago, I have my class 64 on the coat that I wear. And somebody looked at it and turned to my son and said, did he really graduate in 64? Yes. He should be in a museum. My son continues to kid me about that.
Well, Denny, you're certainly in no museum. And I tell you what, it's going to be a great game. I am really looking forward to it. I say it like this. Army Air Force and Navy Air Force are similar to playoff. And Army Navy is the Super Bowl. So it, those environments, I've been to all of them, and that's the environment, that's the feel I get when I go to a Navy, Army Navy game.
Well, I do too, but I'm a little more biased than you are. Maybe a lot more biased than you are.
Quinn, as they say, when it comes to that game, I don't have a dog in the fight as much.
Quinn, it's been fun. You get next weekend off. We both do. But we'll be back reviewing the Army-Navy game.
All right, Denny.
God bless you, brother.
I am looking forward to it. Okay.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 64 this time? I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S. only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com. Promo code FREEDOM. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, Bill, a Marine vet and dad, hoorah, is very disappointed that Israel is trading a large number of proven terrorists for innocent civilian hostages. Doesn't this just encourage the taking of hostages?
Bill, that's exactly the point. This tells evil people to gain by taking hostages.
And Army Mom Michelle has heard that all of our nation's service academies are really woke. She hopes that's not true.
Unfortunately, it's very true, Michelle. The MacArthur Society is one of the teams that's fighting that. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 4 December 1917, well-known psychiatrist W.H. Rivers presented his report, The Repression of War Experience, based on his work at Britain's Brague-Lockhart War Hospital for Neurasthenic Officers, to the Royal School of Medicine. Brague-Lockhart was one of the most famous hospitals used to treat soldiers who suffered from psychological traumas as a result of their service on the battlefield. By the end of World War I, the Army had been forced to deal with 80,000 cases of shell shock, a term first used in 1917 by a medical officer named Charles Myers to describe the physical damage done to soldiers on the front lines during exposure to heavy bombardment. It soon became clear, however, that the various symptoms of shell shock, including debilitating anxiety, persistent nightmares, and physical afflictions ranging from diarrhea to loss of sight, were appearing even in soldiers who had never been directly under bombardment, and the meaning of the term was broadened to include not only the physical, but the psychological effects produced by the experience of combat. The most important duty of doctors like Rivers, as prescribed by the British Army, was to get the men fit and ready to return to battle. Nevertheless, only one-fifth of the men treated in hospitals for shell shock ever resumed military duty.
Yeah. And on 6 December 1941, the day before Pearl Harbor Day, President Roosevelt, convinced on the basis of intelligence reports that the Japanese fleet was headed for Thailand, not the U.S., telegraphed Emperor Hirohito with the request that, quote, for the sake of humanity, end quote, the emperor intervene, quote, to prevent further death and destruction in the world.
And on 7 December 1941 at 7:55 a.m. Hawaii time, a Japanese dive bomber bearing the red symbol of the rising sun of Japan on its wings peered out of the clouds above the island of Oahu. A swarm of 360 Japanese warplanes followed, descending on the U.S. naval base at Pearl Harbor in a ferocious assault. The surprise attack struck a critical blow against the U.S. Pacific Fleet and drew the U.S. irrevocably into World War II. At 7:02 a.m., two radio operators spotted large groups of aircraft in flight toward the island from the north. But with a flight of B-17s expected from the U.S. at the time, but from another direction, they were told to sound no alarm. Thus, the Japanese air assault came as a devastating surprise to the naval base. Much of the Pacific Fleet was rendered useless. Five of eight battleships, three destroyers, and seven other ships were sunk or severely damaged, and more than 200 aircraft were destroyed.
A bad day. And the next day, on the 8th of December, 1941, President Roosevelt appeared before a joint session of Congress and declared, quote, "Yesterday, December 7, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by the naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan," end quote. After a brief and forceful speech, he asked Congress to approve a resolution recognizing the state of war between the United States and Japan. 3 days later, Germany and Italy declared war on the United States, and the U.S. government responded in kind. The American contribution to the successful Allied war effort spanned 4 long years and cost over 400,000 American lives.
And on 4 December 1966, a Viet Cong unit penetrated the 13-mile defense perimeter around Saigon's Tan Son Nhut Airport and shelled the field for over 4 hours. South Vietnamese and U.S. security guards finally drove off the attackers, killing 18 of them in the process. One U.S. RF-101 reconnaissance jet was badly damaged in the attack. The guerrillas returned that same night and resumed the attack, but security guards again repelled them, killing 11 more Viet Cong during the second battle.
On the 8th of December, 1987, at a summit meeting in Washington, D.C., President Ronald Reagan and Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev signed in the first treaty between the two superpowers to reduce their nuclear power arsenals. Previous agreements had merely been attempts by the two Cold War adversaries to limit the growth of their nuclear arsenals. The historic agreement banned ground-launched short- and medium-ranged missiles, which the two nations collectively possessed 2,611, most located in Europe and Southeast Asia. The pact was seen as an important step toward agreement of the reduction of long-range U.S. and Soviet missiles, first achieved in 1991, when President George H. Bush and Gorbachev agreed to destroy more than a quarter of their nuclear warheads. The following year, Bush and Russian President Boris Yeltsin agreed to drastically reduce their number of long-range missiles to around 3,000 launching systems each by the year 2003. In 2001, after a decade of arms control stalemate, President George W. Bush and Russian President Vladimir Putin made a preliminary agreement to further reduce their number of nuclear arsenals to around 2,000 long-range missiles each.
And on 4 December 1992, President George Bush ordered 28,000 U.S. troops to Somalia, a war-torn East African nation where rival warlords were preventing the distribution of humanitarian aid to thousands of starving Somalis. In a military mission he described as God's work, Bush said that America must act to save more than a million Somali lives, but reassured Americans that this operation is not open-ended and that we will not stay one day longer than is absolutely necessary. Unfortunately, America's humanitarian troops became embroiled in Somalia's political conflict, and the controversial mission stretched on for 15 months before being abruptly called off by President Bill Clinton in 1993.
And that's military history for today. And now it's time for the Self-Defense Report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
This is gross, Skip. Don Gilbert was in his motel room when he heard a screaming around 9 p.m., and he grabbed a baseball bat. That's when he saw Kyle Holder, age 32, beating and kicking his two-year-old daughter in the parking lot of the motel. Witnesses said that Holder picked up his daughter from the bed in their motel room and threw her out the window into the cement walkway. Holder then picked up the toddler again and threw her on the ground several times and started stomping on her head. Don Gilbert rushed out and hit Holder in the back and three times on the head with his baseball bat until he stopped attacking his daughter. Holder was arrested and charged with attempted murder.
Thanks, Colonel. Unfortunately, this type of attack is getting more and more common in America and will continue to get worse until we deal with the mental health crisis. I'm not a doctor, so I won't go into the perceived causes, but I will focus on my own area of expertise, and that's how do we protect ourselves from the mentally ill who become violent and hurt the innocent among us? Think about it this way. You're walking down the sidewalk, and a man steps out and brandishes a knife. He says to you, "God has enlisted me in his army and has ordered me to kill you so the tiny aliens in your brain can't be loosed upon the world. If I kill you, then humanity will be saved." Now, you could be thinking, "Skip, that's crazy. Things like that just don't happen." Well, but you'd be wrong. That's the way mentally ill people talk. They're not in their right minds, and they say and do some pretty scary things. Take the man in this story as an example. Kyle Holder made the following statement to witnesses after trying to murder his two-year-old daughter. Quote, "I didn't want to kill her, but I had to. I had to hold my daughter and crush her head so she could go up to the sky," unquote. It's now estimated that one in every five Americans is taking some type of antidepressant prescription drug. That's 20% of us. And after the pandemic and lockdown, it's getting worse. Here's the thing. This is not a simple problem, and it won't be resolved overnight. But in the meantime, everyday citizens like you and I, those of us who are not mentally ill, still have to protect ourselves from people who become violent. Look at it this way. When someone points a knife or a gun at you and starts talking crazy violence, do you really care about his potty training or his drug addiction? Probably not. You're not asking why he's trying to hurt you. You're asking, how can I survive this attack? And that makes perfect sense. After Don Gilbert rescued a little girl and people called him a hero, thinking that he'd done something special, he rebuked them by saying, "The question is, why wouldn't somebody save the girl? If more people took time to care less about themselves and more about innocent people, we wouldn't have the crap going on in the world that we do now." And Mr. Gilbert is right. It's time for Americans to stop wallowing in self-pity and pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and start standing up to violent people who hurt the innocent. Because when the rubber meets the road, it doesn't matter why they're hurting you, just that they are, and that they won't stop until a hero stops them. Frontlines of Freedom salutes Mr. Gilbert for being the hero and saving this little girl's life. We are saddened that Mr. Holder is mentally ill, and we hope he gets the help he needs. But until that happens, he has no right to hurt children, and more Americans need to step up to protect and defend the most innocent among us. It's time, America, to get involved.
Well said, Skip. Our movie of the month is Let's Eat. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog, get the link, and watch it for free. I'd appreciate your comments on the movie. Send your comments to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, U.S. Navy veteran Dr. Zudi Jasser will discuss Muslims in America. Joe Robb will present Save a Warrior. And Air Force vet Amanda Winters will discuss buying the right weapon. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And it's now available in Spanish. You can purchase this book at frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Amazon. Please help us get to this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. It'd be a great Christmas present. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafreedom.com. That's cvafreedom.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the Frontlines of Freedom. Dismissed.